Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Tenaris third quarter 2019 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star, then one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference call is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star, then zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Giovanni Sardagna, Investor Relations Officer. Sir, please begin.
Thank you, Howard, and welcome to Tenaris 2019 third quarter results conference call. Before we start, I would like to remind you that during this call we will be discussing forward-looking information and that our actual results may vary from those expressed or implied during the call. With me on the call today are Paolo Rocca, Chairman and CEO, Alicia Mondolo, our Chief Financial Officer, Guillermo Fogel, Vice Chairman and Member of our Board of Directors, Germán Curá, Vice Chairman and Member of our Board of Directors, Gabriel Podgorska, President of our Eastern Hemisphere Operation, and Luca Zanotti, President of our U.S. Operations. Before passing over the call to Paolo for his opening remarks, I would like to briefly comment our results. Our third quarter sales at $1.8 billion were down 7% compared to the corresponding quarter of last year and 8% sequentially, mainly reflecting ongoing activity reduction in the U.S. and Argentina, which is also affecting selling prices in the Americas, and a slowdown of our sales in Europe, which were also impacted by seasonality. Our quarterly EBITDA at $322 million was down 13% sequentially, and our EBITDA margin at 18% was affected by a decline in average selling prices and the impact of major maintenance stoppages in the Northern Hemisphere, principally in Mexico. Average selling prices were down 1% compared to the corresponding quarter of last year and 3% sequentially. The decline was mainly in North America, where prices have come down due to softer demand and lower steel cost. During the quarter, we generated a free cash flow of $287 million, or 16% of revenues, which included a further decline in working capital of $157 million. And we ended the quarter with a net cash position of $964 million. The Board of Directors approved the payment of an interim dividend in line with last year, or 13 cents per share, 26 cents per ADR, that we will pay in November 20. Now I will ask Paolo to say a few words before we open the call to questions.
Thank you, Giovanni, and good morning to all of you. In this quarter, we continue to generate a strong free cash flow, amounting to 16% of revenues, as we work on reducing our working capital. In the year to date, we have reduced working capital by $500 million, and we expect to reduce this further in the first half of the next year. On the other hand, in this quarter we incurred higher cost and operational inefficiencies than we had originally estimated for the extensive program of major maintenance and investment that we carried out these past months. During these stoppages, we made important investment focused on reducing particulate emission, installing new non-destructive controls, and in expanding our product and pipe tracking capabilities in several plants. This investment will improve the competitiveness and working condition of our industrial system, as well as the ever more stringent quality and HSE requirement of our customer. The additional costs affected the results of the quarter and will also affect our fourth quarter results. In the U.S., the drop in operating rigs has been greater than we had anticipated, driving down the PipeLogix price index by 8% in the last 3 months. And this is affecting our prices throughout the Americas. Most oil and gas operators are focusing on capital discipline and free cash flow generation, looking for a higher return on asset in the short and medium term, and preparing for the next cycle. This is more noticeable in the small and medium operator, while the major have been more consistent in maintaining the level of their operation. In my view, provided that the price of oil does not fall from current levels, The companies should begin to generate a positive free cash flow, and the number of operating rigs should begin to stabilize in the coming months. In this environment, Tenaris, with its focus on serving the majors and large independent, and with our rig direct business model that requires less stock on the ground than the rest of the market, should be able to navigate relatively better than our competitors. At the end of August, our second request for the tariff-free import of steel bar for our Bay City mill was granted, thus helping to consolidate the competitiveness of our operation there. Meanwhile, we continue to expect a positive outcome from our ongoing antitrust process relating to the IPSCO acquisition before the end of the year. In Argentina, with the recent election, oil and gas companies are putting their investment plan on hold, pending more clarity on the policy measure that will be adopted by the incoming government. Given the importance of the development of Vaca Muerta's potential for the Argentine economy over the coming years, we are confident that the new government will create the condition for further development of this exceptional resource. In the Middle East, we won a long-term contract valued at $1.9 billion to supply a large part of ADNOC's OCTG requirement over the next 5 years. This award is the first in the region to introduce rig direct condition and reflect the effort of our team to promote our services and product technologies such as Dopeless connection. It also reflects our commitment to support ADNOC's goal of increasing local content and providing training and development opportunities for their nationals. We are seeing a gradual recovery in offshore drilling around the world, which is confirmed by the spending commitment that has been made during the year. An important proportion of this increase in drilling activity is happening in Latin America. We are participating in projects such as Eni Amoca development in Mexico and ExxonMobil Liza development in Guyana. As we move into the first half of 2020, we expect a recovery in sales and margins, considering our current backlog and ongoing cost reduction programs. We should also be able to continue generating a good free cash flow. Thank you, and we can now receive your question.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star then one on your telephone. To withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Our first question or comment comes from the line of Frank McGann from Bank of America. Your line is open.
Okay, thank you. Good day. Just in terms of the IPSCO acquisition, you indicated that you expect approval by the end of the year. I'm just wondering how you're feeling about it now in terms of with the further deterioration in the market, in terms of the potential for synergies. Is there any potential for a renegotiation of the price being paid or you know, any other thoughts you have now versus when you initially announced the acquisition?
Thank you, Frank. Our discussion with the for getting the approval from the antitrust are proceeding well. We expect to close this deal by the end of the year. This has been is an investment that is aimed for the long run. Is a strategic move on our side. It gave us access to steel making in the U.S., so it's something that we view as a move for the long run on one side, and the element that suggested this investment to us are still there. In terms of synergies, as we also said in the last conference call, we estimate that the synergies that we estimated for the deal are highly in place and will be the same over the future. So we see no changes from this point of view. We have a contract signed. We have a condition for it. We will respect it and go on so that we do not expect any changes in the condition of the deal.
Okay, thank you. If I could just follow up, in terms of EBITDA looking forward, typically you have a nice pickup in the fourth quarter. I was just wondering if you still expect to see that this year, or if the weaker conditions could reduce the impact that you usually have seasonally. And then any thoughts on level of profitability as you go into 2020?
On this account, we have seen a reduction in the level of rigs that exceeded our expectation. Remember, in the last conference call, we were more optimistic on the fourth Q because we were considering that the level of rigs will go down, but not so much as it happens. So today, as we say in our press release, we expect to be able to maintain the margin that we have in the third Q, also in the fourth Q. The factors that are affecting the fourth Q are, in first place, a level of rigs that is, as I say, below what we estimated 3 months ago. Second important factor is Argentina. In Argentina, due to the expectation of the change of government, the oil companies put many of their investment and their activity on hold, waiting for definition on the economic and energy policy. This is affecting the level of drilling and operation in Argentina in the fourth Q. Also, the extra cost and the inefficiency that we had in the maintenance stoppages in the third Q, this has been a very major intervention in many mills. We had an overcost in completing all of this, and this will be distributed among the third Q and the fourth Q. So this is also affecting, to some extent, the result in the fourth Q. So, all in all, as I say at the beginning, we expect the fourth Q to be more or less in line with the third Q. In the beginning of 2020, we expect a recovery in our margins for contract and sales that we have in our backlog, and for some rebound in some of the activity related to offshore and to the Eastern Hemisphere. So, stability for the 4Q and some increase in the first Q of 2020.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Igor Levy from BTIG. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. My first question is on U.S. pricing and margins. U.S. OCTG prices from the start of the year till today are down about 15%, but costs at the same time, hot roll coils down over 30%, scraps down over 40%, which suggests a $200 a ton drop in cost and a $200 a ton drop in prices. So this would suggest similar EBITDA margins, EBITDA per ton since the start of the year, but this appears not to be the case, and commentary around margins has been quite negative. So I was hoping you guys can help me reconcile the discrepancy here.
Yes, thank you, Igor. Well, basically, I think the basic impact is due to the fact that the reduction in the number of active rigs has reduced the size of the market, and so the loss in volume because of the allocation and the impact of fixed cost and so is having an influence in reducing slightly our margins up to now. You should also consider that the hot roll coils, as you were saying, went down pretty substantially in the last quarters. This had an influence on our cost, but we will see this influence more in the coming quarter because of the accounting and the FIFO, the way we account for the cost of our inputs into the cost of sales. We see the price down, and we will see the cost down later on. This decline in the hot-rolled coils has also increased competitiveness of the welded pipe to some extent. This is also a factor that affected the overall price level. To some extent, the share of welded pipe in the overall market increased slightly. This also reduced slightly the volume of our sale, and these are the elements that led to the margin that you see in our result, slightly lower compared to previous quarters.
Great. Thank you. That's very helpful. Then to what extent has the drop in PipeLogix affected prices in the rest of the Western Hemisphere? Then secondly, has there been any price weakness in the Eastern Hemisphere where activity is actually improving?
On this issue, I will ask Gabriel to give us a view on the pricing situation and impact of PipeLogix on the pricing in the region.
Okay. Thank you, Paolo. Good morning, Igor. In fact, there are no major variations in the international markets in terms of pricing, even though the pricing there remains competitive in general. There is a positive momentum in our backlog of contracts that allow us to decouple really from the present price trend that you and Paolo were commenting before from the PipeLogix in the U.S. As a matter of fact, the demand of offshore and complex projects is increasing, so we also continue to serve this market with our service grades, corrosion-resistant alloys, which we are experiencing and seeing in the market a tightness of supply. So in some of those niches, we are also seeing prices going up, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. And as you noticed, we mentioned influence of PipeLogix prices on the Americas because some of the contracts in the Americas have a component of PipeLogix in the formulas.
Great. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Sean Meakim from J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Thank you. First, I was hoping we could maybe just try to unpack some of the margin components a little bit further. So pricing is a challenge in North America and in some parts of international. Other parts are still relatively stable. But as you're seeing less revenue in North America, perhaps more offshore as you go into 2020, can we talk about how you'd expect the mix to shift between welded versus seamless and larger diameter tubes versus maybe what you see in North America and how some of that could influence the margins that you'd see next year?
Thank you, Sean. I would see that the PipeLogix has been influenced by the decline in the rigs. I mean, the reduction in the size of the market has driven down the prices. This is what you realize now. When we look at 2020, I think that overall in the mix, as you were saying, the offshore and the Eastern Hemisphere component will have a positive effect on this. But when you look at the margin and we look at our cost, the size, the volume of the is important in defining absorption. This is an important factor also. What we should also consider for the margins in the quarters in 2020 is the plan for cost reduction and streamlining of our operation that we have underway. In our forecast, we expect that all in all, the margin in the first quarter on 2012 should be 2 points higher than the margin we have in these quarters, considering the combined effect of a better mix and the other factor that we can see as of today.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful. And I was hoping we could follow up a bit more on the Rig Direct award in the UAE. So can you give a sense of how that contract ramps? Is it fairly level load, or does it start slower next year? And just how does that influence your expectations for the Middle East region in 2020?
Yeah, Gabriel, you can comment. I mean, the ADNOC, let me tell you, Josh, there has been a very great achievement. We are getting more than 50-plus percent of the contract, and is a massive operation in the leading countries in the Middle East. So it's been very relevant for the entire organization. But, Gabriel, you can add on this and the perspective that this is opening.
Yeah, thank you, Paolo. Good morning, John. Indeed, a very big achievement of our team in the Middle East to finally land that contract that we have worked hard to win. Has been a very good collaboration with ADNOC that really showed the willingness to modernize and transform and bring best practices into the Middle East. It would be the first contract of this size, of this magnitude, and direct in the Middle East. The contract of $1.9 billion, as Paolo was mentioning, will cover 5 years with a possibility for an extension on two. We are working on the transition. We are working through the information of the stocks and drilling programs of ADNOC. We are in that process as we speak, mobilizing resources and preparing for that. It will take some time until the full volumes and shipments materialize in our books. We expect the contract to start with some impact on the second half of 2020, but to really start 2021 and thereafter with a full impact. We are also working on upgrading our service center. We have committed to have a state-of-the-art, also premium manufacturing facility in Abu Dhabi. This was also part of our distinctive and winning proposal, the fact that to invest in local content and manufacturing in the Emirates to train and to help the Emirates diversify their economy. That was part of the success story there. Coupled with the local and global track record that we have on Rig Direct, this, as you can imagine, for ADNOC and for the country, the revenues, oil and gas is a major part of the economy, and to rely on a company to be handling and managing 50% of the supply chain of the tubulars, It's a massive vote of trust and commitment on our side. So we are mobilizing resources. Also, it's important to note that our range of products will cover really all the drilling environments. We are the only company that will be covering both the onshore and the offshore. So this is, goes from carbon, sour service, chrome, dopeless, all the spectrum. So we are really satisfied and mobilizing resources to deliver value, because we expect that this to be the first in the Middle East, but our expectation is that this to become a showroom for the rest of the region as well.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of David Anderson from Barclays. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. So Tenaris obviously has quite a bit of exposure to Argentina. I was just wondering if you could just kind of talk through some of the scenarios that you're thinking about. The timeline, like when are we expecting to hear something from the Argentinian government? And could you just kind of tell us what would be good and what would be bad in terms of the industry? So basically in terms of what we're looking for. I know price controls has certainly been something we've talked about, but maybe just talk about the different scenarios that you're envisioning.
Thank you, David. Well, I think the in Argentina we will see the change in the government is important, but the new government still, I think, needs to evaluate the circumstances and the different factors that are affecting the economy didn't make up yet all of even his views for the future. In my view, didn't work through yet a plan for leading the economy into a growing path in the coming year. There are several issues, high inflation, the need to face a debt that is relatively high for Argentina, the need to redefine the agreement, or at least to validate the agreement with the Monetary Fund, and a number of decisions in internal on the internal market, and last but not least, how to manage the energy policy for the country and how to support the development of Vaca Muerta. Our view is that the governor will assume on the 10th of December, he will take his time to prepare the plan and build the team. Today, this is not yet clear. I expect in the coming months that we will understand much more about this. Now, development of Vaca Muerta is essential, is one of the key component for recovering sustainable growth in the economy. So this will be a key component of the program of the future government. We hope that the government will set in place an energy policy that will promote investment by local and foreign companies. This is very important, but at the moment we have no indication of which will be the direction that the government may take. You are saying what is good and what is bad. In my view, it is very important that the government has an understanding with the Monetary Fund and with the external creditor that stabilize the external sector, and also that may preserve the rules in place up to now for the energy sector. This is something that we will understand and see in the coming weeks before the 10th of December.
Okay, thank you. On a separate subject, you had talked about your mix is improving, going to be improving next year with a little bit more offshore work. You had mentioned Latin America. Could you just perhaps just give us some indication of kind of where some of the pockets of strength are on your offshore business right now, and maybe what you're hoping to see, maybe some areas that haven't quite emerged yet that maybe you might think happen later in 2020?
Well, Latin America is important in the future of offshore. We consider that the production that may come for the future project, the additional production for future projects in offshore, to a large extent will be based in Latin America. Between 40% and 50% of this additional production should come from Mexico, from Guyana, from Brazil, general from offshore Latin America. We think we have a very strong position in Mexico. The mention one of the projects in NEI development is the first to enter into production stage, but there are many other that are coming. In Guyana, it's not only Liza, are a number of projects around this that will continue growing during 2020. And in Brazil, the activity will move more aggressively probably in the second half of 2020. Gradually, we'll expand activity by Petrobras, activity by private. Maybe for Mexico, how we see Pemex and private, Guillermo, you can add some specific comments to this.
Well, I think Mexico, Paulo, we have good news in terms of the dynamics of the market. The drilling activity continues to increase, driven by both Pemex and the coming up of the different rounds. Just to mention a number, we have on the third quarter the double of the number of rigs we had in the first quarter of last year. We expect another jump in the fourth quarter in the number of rigs. Probably we're going to be seeing an increase of another 20-25% increase in the number of rigs in the fourth quarter, and then we continue to see an improvement of the conditions. The mix in Mexico is very good. It's a very good mix. We have also the deep water projects. We have the Eni. We have the farm out with Shell. So I would say that in terms of the market activity and in terms of the product mix, Mexico is going to continue to be good news.
Yeah. I think these are the major driver, no, of activity in South America. Outside South America and in the Eastern Hemisphere, Gabriel, some comment on the main project, the area in which you see them more dynamic.
Yes, Paolo, in the international markets of the Eastern Hemisphere, also the offshore is showing a positive dynamic, is gradually recovering. The area that has been most active has been the North Sea. We see there a number of mid-sized projects coming on stream, also a lot of number of tiebacks and smaller scale projects as well. We're also seeing a comeback of exploration, especially in Norway. So we are very well positioned there with our technologies and services platform to take advantage of that positive momentum. Sub-Saharan Africa is also on the move to a lower extent than the North Sea, but it's also moving in the right direction. We are seeing a good amount of advanced work on greenfield projects, deep water projects in Angola, Mozambique, and some other basins there as well. Nigeria is also moving only on the onshore and the shallow waters. Still, we don't see major projects on the deep water in Nigeria. So overall, Sub-Sahara and Africa is starting to move as well. When we go to Asia, well, China has a big drive for gas, both onshore and offshore as well. So that's another pocket where we are participating and we are seeing better prospects going ahead. And Southeast Asia has been quite stable. On one hand, we have some positive dynamics associated with the deep water drilling in the LNGs in Australia, like we had in the second quarter of this year, and we'll have at the beginning of 2020. And the weakness there has been the Gulf of Thailand, as there are changes in concessions going ahead. There has been some softening of the drilling activity. But all in all, across the Eastern Hemisphere, we see a continuous trend on offshore gradual recovery.
That's good to hear. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Marc Bianchi from Cowen. Your line is open.
Thank you. Paulo, if I heard you correctly, talking about 2 percentage points of margin improvement for the first quarter might put your EBITDA maybe a little over $350 million in the first quarter of 20. I'm curious how you see that developing over the course of the year. It sounds like you anticipate increases from there. Is it reasonable to think that we could be looking at a EBITDA number above $1.5 billion for the year, just kind of based on the outlook that you guys have today?
I don't think we have visibility beyond that. And also, considering the previous experience in the last quarter, in which we were overly optimistic on the rig count, in the U.S., we will not make any forecast of the evolution after the first quarter. This is where we see that we can, we have contract in our backlog, we have, predictable vision also of where the prices are going and the action we are taking in our cost that should allow us to give this 200 basis points in additional EBITDA for the first quarter, but it would be very difficult to have a view. You know, the world today is a very volatile world. There are many unpredictable issues going on, and so I don't think it's easy to have a medium-term forecast beyond what we did with the first quarter, no?
No, certainly understand. I guess in terms of the cost progression beyond first quarter, which maybe you do have some more visibility to, are all the cost actions you're taking going to be completed and benefit the first quarter, or is there additional benefit to be realized beyond? And you know, what's the impact that you anticipate from that? And then also, you talked earlier about HRC and the effect on your margins. Could you talk a little bit about scrap and how you see that developing?
Well, you know, there are two components. One is the permanent work on cost reduction that is underway. We let's say we have a number of programs that gradually bring benefit allocation among plants, improve efficiency within the plant, and also the return that we get from the investment. We are maintaining a level of investment every year in the range of $350 million that has an impact on our efficiency, on our cost. And this is something that is underway, and in all of the past 5 years, we got every year some improvement in our cost due to this permanent action, continuous improvement action. Then there is a cost of inputs. Basically, scrap is very important for us. As you know, Tenaris is close to 90% scrap based. This is very good from our environment position and CO2 emission. Is also something that is, let's say, making our operation depending on scrap in the different market. What you can see, I mean, you have you are aware of the price of hot rolled coils, and scrap went down in the last quarter. The hot rolled coils went down pretty abruptly. This has an influence in the cost of our welded product, but also is driving down prices of welded pipes. And this is something that is part of the price decline in North America. So these are the moving parts that are affecting our cost. It's difficult to have a forecast, medium-term forecast, on scrap price. You know, this depends to a large extent from issue like the sanction against Turkey, the level of operation in Turkey, and so these are difficult to forecast for the medium range. What we know is that our continuous improvement will give us a permanent cost reduction over time, in the provided we are able to maintain a level of volume, a volume of production more or less in line with what we are doing today.
Okay, very good. Thank you for the comments.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Amy Wong from UBS. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. A couple of questions from me, please. The first one relates to your international tenders. Could you comment on how the competition is shaping up? Is it getting more or less competitive, or is it still, you know, pretty much the same players that are tendering for these projects? And my second question relates to your North America business, and it's just a bit more qualitative, but could you help us understand that now that, you know, you've got a bit more penetration in your Rig Direct, how the your experience with the slowdown you're seeing right now, how do you think Rig Direct is actually helping you out in the current slower environment, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. On the international tender, I will ask Gabriel to give us an overview of how is the competitive environment there.
Yeah. Yes, hello, Amy. In terms of tenders, hi. In the international markets, in the competitive environment, has been not changing dramatically. As I was saying, higher demand on the complex projects has been mainly played by the same traditional tier one competitors, and that's where the tightness and the strength in the prices is. So no much change. We don't see deep water projects or complex projects where new players are being introduced. I think that still our industry is very conscious of potential issues regarding to failure of a product and the importance of quality in our space. Then if you go to the lower end of the competition, really where if you want the low spec or commodity type of pipes, that's not the market where we're in. That has been occupied to a large extent to the by Chinese or lower end players. This is not a part of the market in the Eastern Hemisphere where in the majority of the cases we take part. And then there is a medium spectrum where we only participate, where we are able to differentiate products, services, local content. And these are the intricacies of the 50 countries that we monitor in the and we do business in the Eastern Hemisphere, where we see a chance to have a genuine and sustainable competitive advantage. So all in all, there is not a massive change in the landscape of the competitors.
But thank you, Gabriel. North America and Rig Direct, Luca, I will ask you to comment on this.
Thank you, Paolo. Good morning, Amy. Well, there are a number of benefits, and one was mentioned in your introduction, Paolo, which is that the redirect allow us to be more close to the real consumption. So we work with redirect with much less inventory, and so one of the benefits is that, relatively speaking, we should be better positioned to wave through this downturn. The second that I would mention is that cutting out all the intermediation, we create benefits and synergies that we tend to share with our customers, but at the same time come to our benefit as well. And the third one that I would mention is that being very close to our customers, we can really develop what is needed by the customer. And here I don't want to go into many details for competitive reasons, but we recently developed a specific product for a big operator, and this certainly will give us in the long term the possibility to establish tighter bonds and a better relationship with this customer, in a relationship in which we drive efficiency and cost down on their side, and we gain relationship and value on our side as well. I believe that these will be the three that I will mention. Of course, we can talk 1 hour about this.
By the way, the penetration of this, we are now 75% under Rig Direct process. This has been a very relevant penetration in a relatively small period of time, you know. This is the main comment. Now, you know, this Rig Direct comes together with many features. One of these is the traceability and tracking of the entire pipe by pipe, product by product. I mean, we are managing our inventory. Over time, I think we should also be able to reduce the level of working capital thanks to the way we manage our inventory. In the end, in the market, there is more than 5 to 6 months of inventory. We are managing Rig Direct with much less of this. in the range of 2 months or less. I think we could do even better in introducing very high integration with the client, including IT, information technology integration with the client. We should be able to reduce inventory to a much lower level. This is what we consider a strong competitive advantage.
All right, that's very clear. Thank you. I hope the higher penetration is not just because of the number of rigs are dropping off, but very, very good there, very good progress there. Thank you. I'll turn it over.
Yes, I know that this is, you're right that the rigs are coming down. This is true. But let me tell you that most of our clients that are major or independent are more stable than the entire market. Remember, half of the market in the U.S., is very driven by very small companies, mom and pop, drilling in field. So in this sense, our operations are more stable, even in a situation of capital discipline, extreme, I would say, capital discipline, and part of most of the operator. This is more aggressive, is carried out more aggressively by the small operator and small independent than by the large and large independent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Ian McPherson from Simmons. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to just sort of follow the bouncing ball from the third quarter, fourth quarter, first quarter EBITDA progression. And I know that we were expecting about $50 million of non-recurring maintenance impact as we go from Q3 to Q4, and I just want to see if that's still the case. If it is, it obviously, you know, implies an otherwise significant decrease from Q3 into Q4, and that, to me, just makes it a little bit harder to reconcile fully to the higher EBITDA in Q1. So I just wanted to sort of re-audit that progression of the maintenance impacts with regard to how we get from 320 in Q3 or 322 and then to a better number in Q1. That would be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Ian. Well, basically, as I mentioned in the beginning, we have, for the way we account for the major maintenance, we have a program of maintenance for the entire year, and we distributed in quarter by quarter. If we have 100, we distribute 25, 25, 25. When we realized the quote, the investment in August, and we have overrun there, I mean, it was so big and so relevant, we had overrun overall in the range of close to $20 million of an overall program that if we consider not only maintenance, but, I mean, the entire operation was very substantial. We distributed these 20 into the third Q and the fourth Q because we have to adjust overall year with the real investment, the real maintenance expenditure in the overall year. This is the reason why this overrun is impacting also in the fourth Q. Now, when we get into the first Q, the situation changes because the maintenance plan expenditure that we plan for 2020 is substantially lower than the one that we plan even without the overrun for the 2019. So the expenditure for maintenance will go down one quarter to the other by around $20 million. This will be the reduction in this account. When we complete the plan, I hope we can drive it down by $30 million, something more. But I mean, conservatively, between 20 and 30 million will be the shift from Q4 into Q1.
That's really helpful. Thanks, Paolo. I would just like to say kudos on the free cash flow here. There's a lot of discussion about free cash flow and energy these days. The evidence of it in Tenaris is very unique and appreciated. So thanks. I'll pass it over.
Thank you very much. By the way, we plan to continue to generate cash flow now for production.
Thank you. Okay. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Stephen Gengard from Stifel. Your line is open.
Thanks. Hello, everybody. So actually following up on your comment you just made on free cash flow, going forward, I mean, obviously you have the acquisition on the horizon here, but how do you think about uses of cash? I mean, are there areas that you want to expand geographically that you may be looking at from an acquisition perspective, or do you think there'll be potentially more cash coming back to shareholders as you continue to generate cash going forward here?
Thank you. Well, as you say, we are very much focused on cash generation, the reshaping of the supply chain, and the focus on reduction on stock in process is one of the drivers in our management controls, in our action. So we are focused on this. On the receivable, on the rest of the working capital, we also try to improve permanently on this. And this, we have been pretty successful this year. By the end of the year, we will end up with a free cash flow in the range of more than 1 billion, 1.1, a number in this range by the end of the year in cash, in free cash generation. Now, when we enter in the next quarter, we expect higher level of sales, as I was mentioning. So to some extent, in December, we may need to have some higher inventory just to prepare for sales in the first quarter. But this overall, it should not have too much of an impact on our cash flow generation. As far as application of this, as you saw, we are maintaining a very consistent dividend policy with a pretty relevant payout, and this is something that we plan to continue to propose to our board or even in the future. On the other side, apart from the acquisition that you mentioned, we have a number of initiatives that are consolidating our position in the different region underway, and we will continue with these activities in 2020. As we announced, we are participating in a project in Siberia. Is part of this program for establishing a stronger roots in key region and key market. We think that it's very important to have resources for pursuing this action of strengthening our position in regional scenarios, apart from investing in permanent improving in our plant. And also the other issue, the other point on which we have an extensive investment program is environment and decarbonization of our processes. So in the end, regional setup, improvement in technology and innovation for our industrial and supply chain facility, information technology for relation with client and digitalization of the chain, but environment and decarbonization is the other point on which we have a constant flow of investment. And we plan to continue to do this in 2020.
Thank you. And if I could just ask one other question, and I'm not sure how much you want to comment on this at this point, but when you think about the potential integration of IPSCO, how well does that fold into the Rig Direct model in the U.S. and are there any sort of thresholds of sort of size where Rig Direct can go? And I'm just trying to figure out if there's any kind of conflicts it creates in the supply chain with distributors, or can you start to push a lot of this through the Rig Direct system?
Well, I really think that the Rig Direct is our way of building relation with the client, and we will transform our supply chain in that direction. We will continue to do this, but Luca, maybe you can add on
yes,
the regard of the American, North American situation and the possible integration with IPSCO.
Yes, Paolo. Good morning, Stephen. IPSCO fits perfectly with our Read the Red model because it gives us the possibility to expand very efficiently also to the northern region of the United States. As you know, we are very strong geographically in the south, and IPSCO, with their facilities and services in the north, are perfectly fitting with our strategy. And going back to the point that you mentioned already, Paolo, before, the model has demonstrated to be pretty successful because today 75% of our sales are channeled through this redirect model. And we don't see this changing with the acquisition of IPSCO.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Lillian Stark from Morgan Stanley. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my questions. I just had a quick follow-up as well on the free cash flow. If we look into 2020 and these initiatives that you have ongoing, more or less the level of CapEx that you're anticipating in order to continue to support that free cash flow, more or less should we expect it to be around, excluding the investments in Siberia and IPSCO, of course, around the $350 million level, or are there any other initiatives we should be taking into account? And then just the second question I had was more on the timing of the recovery in the international markets. You mentioned Mexico and Brazil and ADNOC being more of a contribution in the second half. Just wondering if there's anything in the first half that could support revenues from the international market during the first half, I mean.
On the first question, I mean, we expect the level of investment to remain in the range of 350, 360 million. This has been the level of investment that we expect for 2019, and this is what we plan to have in 2020. This is not including the IPSCO acquisition or, if there is the case, any other acquisition or could come. Let me confirm this also, Alicia, is the number that we have in our plan, no?
Yes. We are planning about 355 million dollars a year is for 2020 year.
Yeah, so this is the number. Then now the second, on the second question, I'm not sure I understand it too well. Could you tell me exactly which is the point you mentioned?
Yeah, then, you mentioned the contribution from projects in Brazil, the Middle East, even a bit of Mexico having more of an impact in the second half of 2020. I was just wondering, outside of the U.S., what contribution are you expecting from these other markets, offshore, et cetera? You already provided a good color of where things are improving, but is this something we can anticipate in the first to start having an impact in the first half, or is it still most a second half 20 effect?
Yeah, let me tell you, all of the elements that I mentioned that were affecting our forecast for the 4Q, the one that we made 3 months ago, one was Argentina. Argentina, in the end, turned out to be much lower than expected. This is one area in which if the government put in place a consistent, predictable, and a solid energy plan, I expect that Argentina could get back to a level of investment operation maybe during 2020, but this is something subject to audits. In the case of Mexico, as Guillermo was saying, we are very confident on increase from Pemex activity and from private offshore and onshore development. This will be important for us. In the case of Brazil, I was mentioning the second part of 2020, and probably, gradually the program for offshore in Brazil will go on. We hope that we will have an opportunity in Brazil in the second part of 2020, not so much before. In the case of the Eastern Hemisphere, Gabriel.
Yes, thank you, Paolo. Good morning, Lilian. In fact, with the positive dynamic that we're mentioning on the Middle East and also in the different regions of the offshore in international markets, we have been able to create a strong backlog into 2020. So we expect second half of 2019 with higher sales in the Eastern Hemisphere than in the first half of 2019. I'm also pretty confident that the revenues for the first half of 2020 will be higher than the second half of 2019.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much for the additional color.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Edward Vaughan from Redburn. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question and the clarity on the IPSCO acquisition. I was just wondering if you could give a bit more guidance in terms of the timing of the integration. I think you last spoke about around 100 days or so. Is that still what you're thinking? Thank you.
Let me understand if I understand you well. The timing of the closing of the acquisition, is this correct?
The timing for the integration for the synergies of the
For the integration. We plan to close this by the end of the year, and then we expect. We have a program for 100 days for the first degree of integration. That is a basic integration of the business, and then the continuous improvement will go on over time. But after 3 months, we assume that we are able to have in place all the major processes of Tenaris into the company.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I'm showing no additional questions in the queue at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to management for any closing remarks.
Okay, thanks a lot for joining us, and I see you soon around. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.